This honorable court is again in session. Be seated, please. Case number 09-1001 et al. Lake Harriers Association petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Hartman for petitioners, Mr. McDermott for respondent.
May it please the court, we've asked to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Barry Hartman. I'm counsel for the Lake Carriers Association, as well as the American Waterways Operators. With me today is Mr. Guillen, who's counsel for Canadian Shippers Association. I'll be presenting argument for all parties. The issue before the court is whether the EPA's failure to give notice and take comment regarding 100 substantive conditions included in a nationwide permit under the Clean Water Act violated the Administrative Procedures Act. And we submit there is. To present our argument, I'd like to make several contextual statements regarding the case, what this case is about, very briefly. We know the Clean Water Act regulates discharges from point sources. We know vessels are point sources, and we know under the law all discharges must be permitted. This permit that's before the court today is an unprecedented first-time nationwide permit that for the first time regulates mobile sources under the Clean Water Act, that is, discharges as they move from state to state. That has never happened before.
Where are they moving? You're putting it in context, but if a ship is within the territorial waters of the United States moving along the coast and it discharges, it's not violating any state law, is it?
If it's within the three-mile limit, it could be violating a state law, yes.
It could be?
Well, if a state it separately regulates that source under its own state law.
Well, that was my question. Do the states have authority to regulate discharges within the territorial waters of the United States?
Within their own jurisdiction, under their own state laws, they could regulate them as pollutants if they had a law that authorized them to do so.
Out to the three-mile limit?
I believe it's the three-mile limit. I think that's correct.
In the contiguous zone, they don't have authority?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
So for the first time, the EPA is regulating mobile sources.
How do the states enforce that? I'm not clear how the EPA enforces it. It used to be the Coast Guard did it, didn't it?
And the Coast Guard still does, Your Honor. The problem, this is what's unique about this case. For 30 years, EPA had an exemption in place where it did not regulate mobile sources, incidental discharges from mobile sources.
Yeah.
The Coast Guard has always regulated under separate laws. And that was one of the reasons why EPA didn't. Ninth Circuit ruled that EPA had no authority to have that exemption, and so therefore required that they either regulate them or not let them operate if they were going to discharge.
And the are we talking about anything other than ballast?
Yes. There's 26 different waste streams that are regulated. Deck runoff, when it rains onto a ship and the rain runs off, that's a discharge into waters of the United States, that's regulated. When a vessel pulls up an anchor and there's stuff that drips off the anchor, that's the discharge into water of the United States. That's one
these
of the
are, are these only coastal waterways?
Or? No.
No, okay.
Inland waterways as well. Admittedly, however, Your Honor, the ballast water issue is a major issue in how EPA is regulating that. That was exempted under the exemption.
And there's a case pending challenging the flushing of seawater beyond the you have to flush the ballast out or something.
Coast Guard has in its own set of regulations regulating what's called ballast water exchange.
Okay.
They regulate that under the National Invasive Species Act and other laws. They've been regulating that for years. And that's everybody thought that's the way it was going to be regulated until the court removed the exemption and said to EPA, this is a discharge that you have to regulate.
They're not challenging that, right?
Whether they have the authority to regulate?
Right.
No,
but, yeah.
No. No, they that was decided by the Ninth Circuit.
What I was just wondering, if you win this case and we were to vacate the national permit, you wouldn't be able to operate at all, would you?
Your Honor, we didn't ask to vacate the national permit. It's severable. Only Section 6, which has the state conditions.
If we vacated that, you would still be subject to the states, wouldn't you?
If states passed laws to do things, we would be. But
states have passed laws.
Some have, some have not. For example, one of the issues we have is the New York standard. That's not actually a substantive enforceable state, New York state law. That's only enforceable under the federal VGP.
Well, how many of these are and how many of these aren't?
How many states have some law that regulates some aspect of discharges. Your Honor, I can't answer that. There are some states that regulate ballast water and some don't. I don't know the number off the top of my head.
So these state-by-state requirements, the state regulation says it can only be regulated through the national permit?
No. The states simply didn't pass laws to do it themselves under their own organic state law. There simply was nothing there. EPA promulgated this national permit for all waters of the United States and asked states like New York that said, what do you want us to add as conditions? New York said, add these conditions to protect our waters. So now those are federally enforceable, not state enforceable, federally enforceable conditions. That's what makes this case very important to be considered, is you have a federal permit that is enforcing 100 plus state standards as federal law, not as state law.
There was no hearing, no regulatory procedure followed. Are you saying in New York this was just by the New York, whoever they are, just told EPA this is what we want? You mean to tell me there was no regulation that was promulgated or law passed?
There was no regulation promulgated. What New York did and what other states did was they said to EPA, these are the conditions that we want included. Now, they put it through their own notice.
Each state had to have a hearing on...
Each state had to have some kind of process under their own laws that provided the public with notice and opportunity to comment on what they were going to tell EPA.
I understand if you have a lot of states going on and a lot of these hearings being held, you might be moving from one to the other, but each one of your members had an opportunity to have to protest in the state that promulgated the rule.
Only as to the substance of that state's rule, and we're not asking for that opportunity now. We're talking about that set of rules, which for the first time existed on December 18th, a set of rules that was never together before, whether the EPA had to take comment on whether that set of rules as a group presented federal issues.
And how they interacted with one another.
Exactly. Not each of them individually. We're not suggesting we don't go to the states, as difficult as it may be, and say, hey, this is a problem under your laws. But the question is, until you have them all together, there's no opportunity to consider that issue.
What could they have done?
They could have done several things, Your Honor. First of all, they could have taken comment. Their statement regarding the law is incorrect.
Well, substantively, what could they have?
They had several options.
You have a provision that says the administrator shall approve. And when you have at least four of our cases saying that the administrator has no choice but to approve.
Well, they have no choice but to approve certain things, but they certainly have the option to decide whether the conditions are consistent with federal law, with 401, for example. The cases have said that, including the court's case last week.
In what regard are they inconsistent? What's your argument that they're inconsistent with federal law?
Well,
I understand that your argument about maritime law. I understand that. But what's your argument about 401?
It's 401 versus the scope of the question is whether the agency can consider whether or not those conditions as a set are inconsistent with federal law like the Constitution, not just Section 401.
That would suggest that the statute's unconstitutional.
No, Your Honor, we're not suggesting the statute.
The statute says shall approve whatever is presented to it. Then either it has to do that or it can't do that because it's unconstitutional. But there's not, we were sitting during the last argument, there's not much ambiguity in that language.
Well, Your Honor, the agency has another option. If they think there's a problem, it can withdraw the federal permit and not issue it. It certainly has that ability.
Well, you had the opportunity to make an argument about the national permit. I didn't take it that you were against having a national permit.
We did not challenge whether there could be a national permit. We didn't know what the implications would be with state conditions.
Well, you certainly made an argument that the states would have different ones and that would be problematic.
We thought that could be a problem.
Right.
We thought it could be a problem, but until we saw what they did, we didn't know whether it would be a problem. And the example we gave between New York and Michigan, apparently it will be a problem. Now, New York has now temporarily tried to suspend theirs, but it's still in effect before this permit expires. And so we believe there is a problem. Now, the extent of it, quite frankly, is exactly what the agency should have taken comment on.
You can sue New York and say that they're violating the Dormant Commerce Clause, right?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because, first of all, one of the constitutional issues we see is a due process issue, and New York's law standing alone may not be a due process problem. It's the problem of whether a vessel has to go from New York to Michigan, and it can't comply with both. And there's no place.
That's what all the Dormant Commerce Clause cases are about. you know, the ones about the size of the railroad cars and all those other things. You could argue, and this is a problem with Dormant Commerce Clause litigation, about which state you ought to sue in. But nonetheless, they do sue in individual states.
The problem...
Those are the way those cases are resolved.
But the problem here is that we have a federal permit, a federally enforceable requirement. Remember, the state requirement in New York, for example, is not enforceable under New York law. We have a federal permit where the federal government is saying, when your vessel is going through New York waters, you have to comply with Michigan standards, and you have to comply with New York standards. And by the way, the New York requirements and the Michigan requirements don't match. If you meet one, you may well violate the other one. That's the problem we have here with this set of conditions, and why there's no other place where this can be considered, certainly by the agency as a first point, or by a court, but first is by the agency. That's what we're talking about. Can the agency, when it's going to issue a federal permit and tell everybody what to do, consider the possibility that what it's telling them to do might violate the Constitution?
Imagine that we hold against your view, but we hold that the EPA has no choice but to accept the state regulations, regardless of whether they're inconsistent with each other or not. No choice under the CWA. Then what is there still something to argue about?
If the court holds that the agency must accept them regardless of whether they violate the Constitution?
Well, under the CWA. Now, you can still challenge the CWA as unconstitutional, which you have not done. You could still challenge in each state whether or not those regulations violate the Dormant Commerce Clause, which we don't have before us. But if the question that we resolve were to be that under the CWA, the administrator has no choice but to adopt the state regulations. That's all the CWA authorizes it to do. Is there any further argument from you?
Well, the Administrative Procedure Act requires that the agency consider comments. And if the agency is presented with a comment that says, your proposal is unconstitutional, I think it would be unprecedented to conclude that while it follows the APA for purposes of the Clean Water Act, it can't consider that.
Well, can it not? I mean, I guess I'm not. So you're saying that what they can do, even without a ruling that it's unconstitutional or even an argument that it's unconstitutional, they have to not follow the CWA? I'm asking, imagine yesterday we held that in every circumstance, under all circumstances, the only alternative for the EPA administrator is to accept the state regulation. That leaves you with the opportunity to argue that that's an unconstitutional system, but it doesn't allow the EPA administrator to do anything other than do it, or to refuse to accept the statute at all, which you have not asked them her to do.
But, no, we have not argued that the statute is unconstitutional on its face, because all the precedent by the courts say the EPA is not unconditionally required to accept conditions under 401. That's never been the law. Never. The law has been there are limits to what they can consider. They have to accept state conditions and can't second-guess the state's judgment about state conditions under state law, but the law has never been that they're...
The closest case where the law is that the administrator can reject a state regulation?
I would say the Keating and Tacoma, both of them.
Tacoma, I thought, pretty clearly says that they do have to accept.
As a matter of substantive state law, they can't challenge it. But what it says was, if the question regarding the state section 401 certification is not the application of state water quality standards, but compliance with the terms of section 401 in that case, then the agency must address it. They must address it. And that's exactly what EPA said they couldn't do.
You're talking about the procedural requirements.
Whatever the requirements are.
The requirements in Tacoma that the reference is to?
I believe those were procedural, but there's at least one substantive requirement we know EPA can review. States are not permitted to have conditions that are less stringent than federal standards. That's certainly substantive.
You're not arguing that, are you?
No, we're arguing that they're violating the Constitution.
You're not making any argument that it wasn't stringent enough.
That any of the state laws were? No, we're arguing that they're inconsistent.
But you're not arguing that they should all be brought up to the same, to the highest level of stringency, which
that would be certainly one option EPA has if it did the certification itself.
But are you arguing for that?
Your Honor, quite frankly, this industry is interested in one standard. And if EPA wanted to pick the New York standard or the Michigan standard because it thought it was the most stringent and make that the federal standard, then it could reject all the other state certifications as being not as stringent as. If you look at our comments were constantly, we need a standard. We need a standard that works. You need a uniform standard. Please work with us. EPA wouldn't even consider it because they said, we can't touch anything. We can't address it if it's a federal question. We can't address it if it, they said, we can't address it if it's invalid under 401.
But let me make sure I understand your statutory argument. Are you saying that 1341A1 anticipates a situation in which a state cannot give a certification?
Yes.
What's your authority for that?
Well, 401 says a certification shall come from the state where the discharge originates,
right,
or if inappropriate, from an interstate water pollution agency. Then it says later on,
I'm looking at the in any case language. What are you relying on that? In any case where a state has no authority to give such a certification?
That's the second part, where okay. No state has authority to give certification, where there's no interstate agency.
Well, how do we know that a state doesn't have authority to give certification in this?
The problem here is we have 28.
It's because it's interstate. You're saying they don't.
That's right. There's no one state. When you read that language, it talks about a permit, a certification. Not 28 certifications. EPA, this statute says, and what from the prior argument, I'll take, I think it was Judge Randolph's point, is that what was Congress addressing here? It was addressing how do states protect themselves when there's going to be a federal permit? How do we let states protect themselves? How do we balance that issue of states protecting themselves, but the need to have a national water pollution program? And the answer was, if there's one state to certify, if that discharge occurs in one state, that state certifies, it can protect itself. But when you have a discharge that originates in multiple states, there's no one state that can certify. So you have to go to Plan B, which is an interstate agency. If there's no interstate agency, you go to Plan C. So what Congress was addressing was, when will we let states certify and when won't we? And if you look at 401A2, it's quite clear. When you have states that have roles as non-certifying states when they're affected. Congress addressed that. When EPA certifies, EPA's own regulations have very clear procedures and criteria for when, what EPA is supposed to do with those states when there's no one state to certify. How do we deal with states that have different effluent limits? And there's a procedure for them to follow. So we think the statute is very clear that it was always anticipating a discharge, a state certifying for every state permit. And the ultimate reason for that is this. The very last line of 401A2 says no state, no permit may be issued. A permit may not be issued if the state denies certification. So that means on its face, if New York denies certification, that permit, which is a nationwide permit, cannot be issued. Now that means one state vetoes for the entire nation. That can't be what the statute's intended to mean, because clearly only state laws is only preserved, not expanded. And in fact, when Congress wanted to give states that kind of primacy, they did, such as in the Clean Air Act, in the ATA case at the intervener site. But you don't have to even get to that issue. We would assume for the moment.
Is that what it means, or does it mean the ship can't be in New York waters?
It doesn't say that. It says the permit shall not be issued. It's not limited. Yeah. The permit shall not be issued. That's our point. One state certification and one permit. But as I said, I don't think the court needs to get to that, because certainly we would invite the court to. This is the first time that EPA has tried to regulate this, and they need to know, we need to know how this is going to work in the future and how it's going to work for this permit. What are they going to do when they're faced with 28 different states? Do they have to accept the certifications blindly regardless of the impact on the industry? Or is there another option? And we believe the option is clear. They don't have to, number one, they shouldn't. Number two, they don't have to, because they have the right to review, take comment.
Isn't the implication of what you just said that you can't have a national permit?
Not necessarily.
You said any one state can veto it.
If it's interpreted the way EPA says, that's what would happen. But the statute is very clear, and the 103, I think it is, that the agency has an obligation to try to encourage states to do uniform standards. Here's a classic thing where they have to do that. And again, this has never happened before. We've never had mobile sources regulated. So we believe the statute is quite clear as to what it requires, but even if you don't get there, there's no question EPA has the authority to look at those permit conditions and do something, review them for some purposes, very limited purposes, only federal law. And as this court explained last week in the Alcoa case, that all comes from the notion of these are state things, but there are federal laws that are different. There may be purely questions of federal law that it's okay for the agency, because it's creating the permit, to consider, and it's limited. And all we asked was the opportunity to present this to them. I see my time has come has expired.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
From EPA.
Good morning, Your Honors. Martin McDermott from the Justice Department for EPA. I think in the end, this case really does distill to several very simple concepts. Foremost is the plain meaning of Section 401A. That section, both in the
Let me ask you about what are the conditions under which states have no authority to offer a certification under 401A? And it clearly says there are such instances. What are they?
I think they would be relatively rare, and I could speculate about perhaps about one where, say, a governor of a state did not set up an agency, or perhaps an agency was defunded. That would be the proper agency to issue such certifications. And in a situation like that, where there is no one with authority in the state to do it, EPA could, in that situation, step in.
What's wrong with your opponent's argument that one situation would be where it's going to obstruct interstate commerce? Is your opposing counsel right that there are no other instances of general permits covering interstate activities?
I think there would be there are general permits that perhaps could do that. I mean, there's a general permit for stormwater that might have interstate ramifications. There probably are several. This is an unusual program, perhaps, but I think that's there is a very limited realm where that's sort of an example I could come up with. Perhaps there might be a situation where a tribe there's been no agency within the tribe set up to issue 401 certifications. But essentially what the statute fairly says, what EPA's regulations say, and what the Ninth Circuit, this circuit, the Second Circuit, the First Circuit have all said is that look at what 401D says. The conditions that a state supplies essentially by operation of law become conditions on the permit. And interestingly, and I think tellingly, Lake Carriers doesn't challenge the substance of this matter. It's a purely procedural challenge. They have not challenged the constitutionality of the permit. They haven't challenged the constitutionality of the Clean Water Act. What they've suggested to the court is there is some narrow realm, and there they cite the Alcoa case, in which and Tacoma, in which EPA could potentially do some second-guessing of the state. I would suggest, and we put this in our brief in discussing Tacoma, that is an exceedingly narrow situation where, for example, if a certification were outdated, if a state were to come in 3 years after the date by which it was supposed to proffer its certification and say, well, I have a certification now, I'm 2 years too late, that would be an example of where I believe an agency could properly say, I'm not evaluating the substance of your certification, but I am going to reject it. And I think that's what the Tacoma case stands for. That's what the court's Alcoa decision stands for. If you accept the premise that I'm advancing, that 401 it has sufficiently mandatory language that EPA is deprived of discretion and any other agency.
Though, I mean, if one state, their point is that if one state has a requirement that all ballast water must be treated before being discharged with the following technology, and another state has all ballast water must be treated with a different technology, and you go up and down the coast and each state has a different technology, EPA is helpless? It can't do anything?
I believe that is the case. I'd like to just take half a step back from that and say that's actually not the facts, and I believe that if you read Lake Carrier's brief, they are unable to come up with any even hypothetical situation, let alone a real-world situation where there is there are profound impacts on interstate commerce. The example that they use, Michigan and New York, Michigan has a state permit that pre-exists 401 certification. It's an independent program that they have, and they have the right to enact under the Clean Water Act that governs how ballast water is discharged in their waters. And you can run a boat in those waters and also run that same boat in New York waters. It can be done, and they never explain how it can't be done. So I think that on a practical level,
another hypothetical is simply that each state up and down the coast says that you're prohibited from discharging ballast water in state waters.
It's conceivable, and I think that there may come a point when they actually have a substantive challenge to the permit, which they're not advancing. They have not advanced that. If they get to that point, perhaps. But I think what you have to look at also is what's underlying this case, and what's underlying their comments to the agency and their whole approach to this matter. And we understand it to be, and I don't believe they would deny it, that Lake Harriers wants a uniform standard. They believe that the federal government should step in, notwithstanding the Clean Water Act, I believe, 401 and Section 510, which also gives states primacy in the realm of pollution. They want EPA to come in essentially and rewrite the Clean Water Act. They may have a sympathetic audience in Congress, but that's where they need to go. They want the court to, first EPA and now the court, to rewrite the Clean Water Act and years of case law that basically say, states have primacy in this realm. When they give you conditions to protect their water quality, you shall attach those conditions.
Apart from the substantive arguments, did the EPA address these concerns about the effect that this would have on interstate commerce of having 100 state requirements? I mean, did they even discuss that?
I think in general terms, there was some discussion of it, and there were general comments along those lines. And EPA discuss it in general. But if you look at the timing of the process, EPA issues a draft permit, and then states have the right to attach conditions to that permit. So EPA did not, admittedly, and I think properly so, did not take notice and comment on it, on the final permit with those conditions in it. But ultimately,
And again, why is that? I mean, as I understand your opponent's argument, EPA had in front of it a different sort of creature after all the comments came in.
Yes.
And that there should have been an opportunity to comment on how these different state requirements interacted one with another. What was the agency's reasoning for not having comment on that?
Several reasons, really. The one is that the Clean Water Act in 401 assigns responsibility for that sort of debate, I believe, to the states.
So each of the states is supposed to comment
on... Correct, the state
process. Yeah, so Mississippi is supposed to comment on Indiana's regulation?
Well, I wouldn't put it quite like that, but what I would say is, for example, there's nothing that would have prevented Lake Harriers...
States are supposed to be concerned about interstate commerce here? I thought that was your job.
States are supposed to be concerned about the effects of their action. States here have no interest. This is not a there's no claim this is an intentionally discriminatory process. New York has no interest in keeping shipping out of New York. But what the kind of arguments that could be advanced were the arguments that Lake Harrier advanced in the Oswego case when it challenged the New York conditions in New York courts. And they made these type of arguments that, you know, if you go ahead with this, you're going to infringe on commerce. You're going to affect how we move transport, how we do transportation and the shipping along the East Coast. They advanced those arguments. So that's part of our EPA's analysis is there is a forum for that. Congress said in the Clean Water, in Section 401, states are to set up their processes. If you have an argument with it, make the argument there. Ultimately, if they have a larger, say, a more global argument, then perhaps they have an argument in court that there's an unconstitutional statute here. 401's unconstitutional. They've never advanced that, or they can ultimately say...
The argument is that it's up to the EPA under the Clean Water Act to do just that, right?
Their argument is that it's up to EPA to address that, yes, but that is exactly what I believe Section 401's plain meaning and the language of various circuit courts have said. EPA, you do not have a roving mandate to assess substantively these conditions, whether it's an attack on their constitutionality, on whether it's prudent to do it.
But isn't the argument, it's not assessing those conditions, it's assessing the effect they're going to have in concert with the other conditions that are being posed by states in this rather novel area where you're dealing with interstate travel.
I don't think those two things are really separable, though. I mean, I think that they make a lot about this concept of the interplay. But again, I think that there is a narrow realm where you can challenge these conditions, somewhat narrow. You can go to state court in New York and you could argue that these conditions are a very bad idea because they will harm New York shipping, they will affect shipping in neighboring states. You can make that argument there. But ultimately, if you have a problem, their problem comes down to what they do not like the way the Clean Water Act's written. Because there is no uniform standard to come out of this process. There wasn't then, and there's not going to be, except unless it just happens to work out that way. But right now, you have states that have the right. For example, Michigan has a pre-existing permit independent of Section 401. And so if the court were to say, EPA, take notice and comment on this matter, ultimately, Michigan's permit is still there.
How does the Clean Air Act work? You have mobile sources, trucks, planes, cars. Who controls the movement from? I mean, an automobile that's purchased and is inspected and maintained in accordance with New York law can travel to California, even though it may not meet the California standards, right?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Yeah,
the Clean Air Act has a specific preemption provision.
Does it?
We just issued it a week ago on that subject.
Yeah.
That one I'm familiar with.
Yes, I wish I could claim.
Exception for California, yeah. But we don't have the same thing here.
Yeah, I wish I could claim to have read that, but I did not. I was actually preparing for this argument. So respectfully, I have to take a pass on explaining that one. But I think ultimately their notice and comment argument, where it really runs aground, is they say, let us comment, let us tell you about why these conditions don't make any sense. They're bad conditions. You should cherry pick. You should go through them. And this one over here, let's get rid of that one. That's not a good condition. This one over here.
You've spent more time listening than I have, but I didn't think that was their argument. I thought their argument was not to challenge any particular requirement that a state was going to impose, but to challenge, again, use the word, the interplay of those, that something new has been created here because the restrictions that would be imposed on the vessels as they travel through interstate waterways.
I suppose they could have challenged it. Unfortunately for them,
am I misunderstanding their argument?
Well, ultimately, it's telling. They're not challenging it. There is no substantive challenge on the table.
They're saying you all just didn't address that. You didn't give anyone a chance to note it. You didn't give anyone a chance to comment on it, and you yourselves did not address the effects that this was going to have on interstate commerce.
It's purely a procedural notice and comment argument, and that's where our argument. We have two responses.
Easily remedied. You all just.
Well,
let people comment on it and tell us what you think about it.
I wouldn't stand up here and argue that additional process is, you know, necessarily a bad thing or it's, you know, in many cases it's a good thing. But I think in a situation like this, it could actually be misleading because, I mean, you can imagine, to put it colloquially, EPA says, please give us comments on these conditions. We note that
these conditions
Correct.
Interstate
commerce. On the conditions individually, on their effects with each other, on any element of them, and
on the effects on interstate commerce.
On the effects on interstate commerce, whatever it is, even if it's not an interstate commerce, maybe it's just that it's a bad idea, that it's going to damage the economy, even if it's not a constitutional problem. Give us your comments on that, but we're telling you, we are not going to delete any of them. We do not have authority. If we did, we'd be running directly afoul of Section 401, because 401 says, essentially, by operation of law, attach those conditions. So, yes, could they take comment on it? I suppose they could, but ultimately, I think it would be.
There's nothing you could do. You'll take the comments when you're done. There's nothing you can do to change this problem.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes,
so
that's right.
What about this specific argument that they made about the section, I guess it's 401, about whether it really applies in circumstances where there's more than one state involved?
You know, I believe that argument is a very semantic argument. I think that it's conceivable that when the language was written there, that Congress wasn't thinking about directly about general permits, but I think EPA has adapted this language very well to the current situation. And what the way the process works out here is that each individual state does have the authority, and I think it's pretty clear from the way the process worked out, has the authority to issue its conditions. It simply doesn't make any sense to say that you deprive all the states of their ability to issue 401 conditions and then assign that to EPA. There's nothing in the statute that would suggest that that's what was intended by the statute.
If we were to, is it called Part 6, is that what it's called?
Yes.
If we were to vacate it because there was no notice and comment, what would the consequence be for the petitioners here?
For the petitioners?
I assume there was some reason why the moratorium or the stay of the Ninth Circuit's decision was continually extended.
The Ninth Circuit's decision was, and really the district court's decision, there was just a matter of months that was extended. It wasn't really continually extended.
Something was extended for about 2 years, wasn't it?
That was the date by which the district court said this exclusion from permitting shall be vacated in 2 years. I'm not going to vacate it tomorrow.
In other words, there was an exclusion from permitting that it continued for 2 years.
Correct. The court kept it in place for several years.
Understanding the underlying strategy here, but I would have assumed that the reason that exclusion had to continue was because if it didn't, that petitioners might well be in violation in every state which has its own regulations.
Absolutely. The petitioners wanted more time. They wanted a much longer extension. So the petitioners here are in an awkward position. They love this permit for purposes of continuing to do shipping. So if the court were to set aside Part 6, it wasn't briefed. It would be a difficult question.
No, that's what they're asking us to do. So
I know. I know. That's what I think that their argument would be. I think they would probably like that because I think that they think. I guess their view is that would, depending upon how the order would
not then be in violation of the act because they don't have a permit.
I think what they're asking the court to do is just, it would be to set aside just Part 6, and I think what they're suggesting from that is that the state conditions would disappear, and then they would have a freer realm because the vessel general permit is there. Of course, there is also the fact that, as I said before, Michigan has its own permit in place that is independent of 401, so it wouldn't address states like that, and also it wouldn't address if states said, now that you've set aside my 401 certifications, we're going to enact statutes have permits like Michigan and California, and we're going to go about it through an alternative method. But either way, we're going to protect the waters in our state. So I think that ultimately, if the court were to set aside Part 6, I'm not sure that it would redress what their concerns are.
I guess what I'm asking is whether under Section 1311, which says except in compliance with this section, et cetera, the discharge of any pollutant by any person shall be unlawful.
Correct.
If there were no provision for what to do about state regulations, would the discharge be unlawful? Because it wouldn't be in compliance with the section, which wouldn't have any rule at all on the subject, other than the Ninth Circuit's rule, which is that you can't have a exclusion here.
Your question is, if the 401 conditions themselves were set aside, what effect would that have on their ability to discharge? I believe they would still be subject to various state laws that would control those discharges. So I don't believe it would be very helpful to them, frankly.
No further questions. Do the petitioners have any other time?
No.
We'll give you another 3 minutes.
May it please the court. I'd like to address just 2 points. First of all, as to the constitutional issue and whether there's a constitutional violation that counsel mentioned, the point here is there's no record before the court or that EPA even has for us to be able to have said, hey, here's what happens when you have New York and Michigan and Iowa and New Jersey. That's the point. It may be that if there was a record that showed these things and they promulgated those conditions nonetheless, we would then have very specific facts on which we would raise a constitutional issue if this went back, they promulgated it, and then it came forward. Our whole point is that we haven't had the chance to do that, other than in our briefing to the court. There's nothing in the record to do that. Number two, the government was asked, you know, what they said with respect to our comments, and here's what the record says. We do not have the ability to reject conditions we find inconsistent with the CWA 401 certification, citing American Rivers. They said that, I think, 42 times, which we cited in our brief. They don't have the power to find anything, even if it's inconsistent with 401. So they said to the world, we can't do anything. That's just plain wrong. Second point I'd like to make is this as to remedy. First of all, we love the Clean Water Act. We don't want the Clean Water, maybe the Clean Water Act doesn't need to be fixed here and there, but that's not the problem here. The remedy is this, that by its terms, the VGP is severable. If the court finds that the agency did it,
What do you mean by its terms?
There's a section in the VGP that says this shall be severable. If the court finds that the process by which EPA adopted these certifications is invalid, the certifications are still there. They're just not effective. The substance of them gets vacated.
That means you could discharge anything you want?
No. We are still subject to Part 1 through 5 that cover every one of these subjects. But instead of ballast water being subject to the New York standard, the New York standard, if it was effective in New York, it would be subject to the federal standard that's already in Part 5. So the permit has its own substantive standards for all 26 streams. States simply added conditions. Secondly, the other option for the court, of course, is if it vacated the permit, we go to status quo ante.
What's the federal standard for a discharge of gray water treated and untreated?
It has to do with distance from shore, I believe, Your Honor. I just don't recall whether it's 1 mile or 3 miles.
I was just looking at some of the state conditions. There's no discharge treated or untreated within 3 nautical miles.
Right. Some are 3, some are 1. And in our brief, we sort of explained, well, now we're in New Jersey. Better watch it. Better go 3 miles. Better go 1 mile. That's sort of administratively, that's a difficult thing to do.
That's not a conflict, though, is it?
That may be an excessive burden, but it's not a conflict, not a specific conflict. That's correct. But again, unless these things, most of these conflicts, like the example we gave, are based on extraordinarily technical things, that's what the agency should be taking comment on. And that's what they cut off completely.
Well, if EPA's interpretation is correct in this case, I don't see how you have a Commerce Clause problem at all. Because the EPA's interpretation is this is the way that Congress has decided to regulate commerce. And if Congress wants to authorize conflicting state laws, they can do it.
Perhaps Congress can. I'm not sure Congress said that in the Clean Water Act, that it was authorizing that. There's a provision that expressly calls for EPA to try to reconcile these statutes, these things, and try to get them uniform. This has never been addressed before, even in the stormwater example that council gave.
Which provision says?
103, I think it's 1253.
Is that in your statutory appendix?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. We cite it in
1253? That's just the congressional declaration, so 1251.
I believe we cite it in footnote 5, and I just don't remember the provision, but it says...
I don't think 1253 is in your...
It may be in the supplementary.
Well, that's what I'm looking at. I don't see it.
Here it is. Yeah, Your Honor, on page JA192.
In the little one.
Final supplemental regulatory addendum.
What is it?
ADD-192 in the final supplemental regulatory addendum. I'm sorry for the confusion. In this one.
What does it say?
It says, on page ADD-192, it says, the administrator shall encourage cooperative activities by the states for the prevention, reduction, and elimination of pollution, encourage the enactment of improved and, so far as practicable, uniform state laws relating to prevention, reduction, and elimination of pollution, and encourage compacts between states for the prevention and control of pollution.
But none of that has to do with its authority as a permitter. Those all say encourage states to enact laws, encourage states to have compacts.
And in fact, one of the options under 401 is for an interstate compact as a means of addressing this issue.
Well, instead of a national permit?
No. It would be an interstate compact that would do the certification for the national permit. Remember, 401 says a state can certify an interstate agency.
You didn't make when you had before you the proposal for a national permit, though.
Actually, it was made, Your Honor.
Is your objection that they didn't consider, instead of a national permit, having compacting?
Our objection was most of the objections.
I didn't see that in the brief. I just didn't see it.
I can tell you it's at, and it is, it's made, I think, at the record of 1086. It is not made in any detail. But it refers to this section that says when the state doesn't have authority and it's in a different, slightly different context by one of the commenters, it specifically says.
I'm having some difficulty finding that. You said ADD, and I've got your supplemental or final regulatory addendum, but it ends at, you said 192?
The final supplemental regulatory addendum, yes, ADD 192. The small one.
Yeah. Let's see it. All right.
It's extremely short. It's only about 10 pages long.
It says supplemental joint appendix?
No, final supplementary regulatory addendum of petitioners.
All right.
The only other point I was going to make was that if the court were to vacate, and we did not brief this, we think vacating Section 6 is sufficient. The permit will remain in effect. We can still operate it under, in all 50 states, under the federal standards, which cover all 26 discharges. But even if the court were to vacate the entire permit, the situation would go to status quo ante, and just before the permit was in effect, status quo ante would be the exemption. We're not asking for that. We're simply asking that the...
Well, just before the... now, that would be vacating the Ninth Circuit's decision, which we can't do. So the status quo ante would be the end, the Ninth Circuit's decision and the exclusion run out of time.
Only in the Ninth Circuit, Your Honor. I think status quo ante in this circuit would, everywhere else would be the exclusion as a technical matter. But we're not asking for that.
Was that EPA's position, or that they were going to accede to the nationally?
It may have been their position they were going to accede to it.
Right. So you would be stuck with no exclusion.
We don't necessarily think that's accurate because we don't necessarily agree with their decision that the Ninth Circuit decision is applicable nationally. But again, we don't have to get there at all. It's absolutely unnecessary. Nor do we think the court should get there. It should simply deal with Section 6, which stands on its own as a severable provision of the permit. And we only ask that the agency be made to take comment on these concerns and try to address them.
The first time you mentioned 1253 is that footnote in your reply brief?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And where is it in your comments to EPA that you mentioned it?
We didn't mention 1253 in our comments. I misunderstood. We mentioned the section of the law that gives the agency, that says, well, one of the commenters mentioned the section of law that says either a state certifies or an interstate agency or EPA. I may have misunderstood your question. I apologize.
So you didn't claim that EPA had authority to act on the state laws pursuant to 1253?
Well, not 1253. We did say repeatedly EPA should promulgate a national program. It should put all these state proposals through the APA progress. It's got to try to do a national program if it can. Do something to address this problem of what we think are going to be inconsistencies. And again, until we saw them all, we didn't know exactly what they were. So all we ask is the agency take comment on these things.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The case will be taken under submission.
Stand, please. Honorable Court, now stand adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30.
This is him, right? Not.